Hi everyone, my name's Chris, I'm an addict.
Hi Chris!
I feel sick. Seriously, I do, I feel sick. But I'm sure it'll pass as I get into this and talk and get used to hearing my own voice. It's a privilege, it's great to listen to Tamara. Congratulations to you, clean and pregnant too. It's fantastic. I celebrated my birthday a couple of weeks ago, my NA birthday, and that means more to me today than my belly button. I try and avoid that one if I can because I'm getting older now and I'm 40 next month. I know I don't look it, I know. But, oh dear. Okay, calm down. I was introduced into Narcotics Anonymous through an institution. I was in prison and I love what Tamara said because it really doesn't matter where we come from. Do you know, we come from many different backgrounds, you know, and there might be some of you out there as I'm sharing thinking, oh, I never went to prison. Well, don't let that become something to make you use again. You don't have to go to prison. You know, you don't have to come from poverty. Don't have to come from a council estate to be an addict. Addiction just cuts through all that and gets anyone, you know. I've learned that. It took me a while to get my head around that, I have to be honest. But anyway, I was introduced to NA via a prison sentence. And at that point in my life, it must have been, you know, as you hear, I suppose, over the time I'm around recovery, I hear that as often is the case with a lot of people. You know, that was the lowest point of my life. You know, and... Because I liked using drugs. I loved using drugs. I loved getting out my nut, really. For years, I loved it. But it was the consequences that got me in the end. And the fact that I took so many liberties, my life became really small. And really, like, the amount of people in my life was zero, really. Towards the end of my using in that institution, you know. And this ain't me sitting up here feeling sorry for myself. This is just my story, you know. I wasn't getting any visits. I didn't, as I often say, you know, I didn't have any clobber I could call my own. Didn't even have a pair of trainers I could call my own, you know. I used to have to go and get a pair of Adidas sex offenders to go and play football. That's what we used to call them. But it might sound like nothing to some people, right? But for me to do that, well, I was in a bad place. I felt terrible about myself. And the shame attached to that, I can't explain, to be honest with you. I was on the floor. I was literally on the floor. And my head was on the floor, and I was stooped over. I was shattered, really. I was shattered, broken. And I was introduced to this via me asking someone for help, and it was a prison officer. So I got allocated to a prison that had 12-step treatment centre, and it had loads of NA meetings. So part of the condition for me to be in this prison was I had to do 3 meetings a week. And they had the CHIT system, what we've spoke about in the community recently. It's been going on, I think, in the States for a long time. But it was going on in that prison, and we had to go to the meetings and give the secretary the chit, and he'd sign it, and we'd take it back to our group that we used to have once a week to prove we was doing the meetings. Then that made us eligible to do the treatment, and that made us eligible to stay in the prison. And I didn't, to be honest with you, really take that very seriously. I forged the signatures a few times. I didn't really go to the meetings. I wasn't really at that place. That's the bizarre thing, really, on some level. I was shattered on one level, but then I was still trying to pretend on another level. And I thought, well, I ain't really got a problem. Even though all the evidence was against me, I thought, well, I'm all right. I'm not like them buds, you know. I just like a bit of gear. But, you know, the evidence was getting weighed and weighed and weighed against me. So anyway, I was going to them meetings and not really understanding what this was all about and not really wanting to partake in it, really, to be honest with you. I didn't think it was for me. And I carried on using. I carried on using, and it wasn't great using in the institutions. I didn't really have a lot of money around me. So the couple of quid I used to get off the government, I put a couple of phone cards together with someone else and we'd go and get like 2 pence worth of gear. and we'd sit in the cell and we'd be like, all this euphoria, and then you'd open up the Joey and think, oh my God. Desperation. Gutted. Sick. But you do it anyway. And on some level, that's how powerful this is. You know that it's going to be crap, yet you still do it. And you go without for the whole week, no snack, nothing. Just for two bob's worth of gear. You know, and I've done that. And, you know, and me being me, stupid in a way, I suppose. I don't know another way to describe it, but it wouldn't take Einstein. Even though I had 2 pence worth of gear, I really wanted to make it look like I'd had half a 16th or something. Do you know what I mean? And I'll be scratching my nose and, you know, all the bullshit, right? Trying to bring on this something or other. Do you know what I mean? And I wonder why I used to get piss tests by the officers. And then consequently, I got piss tested a couple of times. So the boundary of that institution was if you got free piss tests for opiates, you was getting out. You was kicked out. You were getting kicked out of that jail and you was going back into the main prison system. So I'd had the two piss tests. I was going to say urine samples, but I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm on tape. Jesus Christ. Two piss tests. Am I trying to kid? I'm amongst a bunch of addicts. You know what I mean? So I'd had the two positive piss tests. So I was on my way out of that jail. So it was arm halfway out the back to go into the meetings and to take it seriously and to partake in it. And I went into the meetings, arm halfway out the back, and I started to think, hold on a minute, there's something going on in here. There's something happening in here. And it wasn't really in what people said. It was just in the energy in the room. Like, you know, there was a power in the room. And I couldn't explain it, but it was like something was going on. And all of a sudden, like, it enabled people to be honest in the meeting and people to say things like, I'm scared. And where I come from, you don't say that, I'm scared, especially as a guy. It's all right to say, I'm angry. Do you know what I mean? But you don't say, I'm scared. And a part of me was blown away with it. My first thought was, you stupid mug, because that's where I come from. But my second thought was, wow. That takes a lot of courage. That guy's actually been that honest. And there's been no reaction in this room. No one's gone up to him after the meeting and said, gish your canteen. That's what I expected to happen, because if you say you're scared, someone's going to take advantage of you. But no one did. No one took advantage of the guy. And in fact, people were saying, yeah, I'm scared too. You know. And then someone got up at the end of the meeting and said, I'm a year clean. And my first thought was... Yeah, well. But my second thought was, wow, a year clean, what, with nothing? Nothing at all. I thought, something going on here, something, maybe I should give this a go, you know? Maybe I, you know, what have I got to lose? Nothing, because there was nothing in my life. I was just starting a 5-year sentence. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And a couple of people give me suggestions and they said, like, you know, try it for 90 days and if you don't like it, go and score because the drugs ain't going nowhere. So I thought, all right, I'll try it for 90 days. He said, but if you can't do it for 90 days, like, break it down, do it for the day. Just break it down into a manageable bit, which is a day. And if you can't do a day, break it down into a couple of hours. So I thought, okay, I can do that. And because of where I was, these guys used to come along in uniforms and put us in a little room for every few hours. So I could do it like that, you know. I'd stay clean till bang up dinner time. I'd stay clean till bang up tea time. And then I'd stay clean till bang up that night. And I got a day clean. Wow. Do you know what I mean? A day without drugs. Thinking about it all day. Do you know what I mean? Really wanting it. But I got a day clean. You know, and then it was like I got a couple of days clean. And then someone said to me, make the tea at the meeting. And again, my first thought was, fuck off. Making the tea for anyone? You know. But then my second thought was, you know what, hold on a minute. These people want to include you here. When's the last time someone asked you to do something for them? Do you know what I mean? When's the last time someone said, come on, mate, come in here, you know. Yeah, I guess hug. You know, reality was, for quite a few years, people was like, not him again. You know, if I went round my family's home, my mum used to shut the door in my face and couldn't let me in. That was how bad it got. And if she did let me in, she'd walk about with her handbag. And I used to think, what a liberty. What's she doing that for? Typical addict, you know what I mean? Like, what a fucking liberty, how dare she? You know, but if she put it down, I'd have been in it. Because I turned into someone that I really don't like, I really didn't like. You know, I turned into quite a bit of a dog, really, a bully. I turned into something I didn't really like. And I didn't know what it was about until I come to Narcotics Anonymous and I found out I was an addict. Someone said, you know, that was like, blew me away. Fucking hell, that's what it is, I'm an addict. That's what it is, you know. And then it was like trying to learn all this new lingo, you know. I'm powerless. What the fuck does that mean? Do you know what I mean? I didn't understand what all the lingo was about. I'm powerless, unmanageability, step one, God. Not for me. Until someone explained it in really layman's terms in my language. And he said to me, you know, how many times you've been in the police station and prayed to get a bit of bail? How many times you've been on the way to the dealer and prayed that he's in? Or how many times you've been on the street corner and prayed he's not going to leave you there for a couple of hours? And then when he turns up, go, hello, mate. When really, in your head, you wanted to do him. Do you know? So I thought, hold on a minute, maybe there is a concept. All a little bit warped, but maybe there is something there. I have a belief in something other than me. Even though it was all about me. Do you know what I mean? Maybe there was something there. So it was just like, crack the door open a little bit to this, you know? And it's just really basic, simple stuff. I just stay clean. That's all I'd done, really, was just stay clean, a day at a time, went through the treatment process. That was an eye-opener, you know, how are you feeling? Talk to me, how am I feeling? You know, it's like, well, I don't know, how are you feeling? You know what I mean? I didn't have a clue. I really didn't have a clue. And I left there and I wanted to go back, desperately wanted to go back and be a peer supporter, because they used to let you go out to meetings on a Saturday and give you a license to get out of jail. So I desperately wanted to go back to be a peer supporter, but I wasn't allowed because apparently I was too angry. And those that know me might agree with that, you know. Maybe I was, but I was so resentful, right? And I shared it the other week at another meeting. I had a job on the gardens because they wouldn't have me back as a peer supporter. So I used to go around the prison like chopping the grass. And they used to have this group in a shack. So I used to purposely go around there with my Walkman on, with a lawnmower, and go around all around his shack while they're trying to have the group, right? Because I was resentful. I thought, what a liberty. They've not asked me back to be a peer supporter. How dare they, right? So the counsellor would come out and go, no, no. I go, fuck off. You know, I'm doing my job. I was so angry, to be honest. Let's have it right, I was so angry, you know. They put it on me in group, you're angry. I ain't fucking angry. Do you know what I mean? But I was. Because you know what, I realised, because I stayed around for a while, I realised what that was about. And that was a few years down the line, once I'd got out of that institution and I was at a convention and I was going through quite a tough time. I was doing another full step. I was looking at some, you know, the core of us, what we, you know, what I needed to do in order to stay around. Look at some of that stuff. I'm not saying that's because I used. I used because I like drugs. But I needed to look at that stuff and get an understanding of it. And in doing that, I was in quite a lot of pain at the time and around certain stuff. And consequently, very angry. And I remember hearing this guy share at the London Convention, this American guy, and he said, like, when he first come around, he was the same. And he's realised over the years that the more angry someone is when they come around, the more pain they're in. And I thought, wow, that's what it is then. Do you know what I mean? That's why I'm so angry. And I stuck around, and I kept going to meetings. And eventually I was able to, I don't know, feel the pain. Eventually I was able to get behind the anger and start crying. And I haven't stopped since. Seriously. Seriously, jokes aside, seriously, I took my theory test. It's been a slow process. My life has took a, you know, I celebrated 11 years clean a couple of weeks ago, which was fantastic. Thanks. I celebrated that birthday, and it's been a slow process, you know, it really has. My recovery on some level has flown, but my life took a while to get together. And I took my theory test for driving today, and I failed. Right? One question, and I failed. I swear to God, I nearly burst out crying in the thing. Totally inappropriate, you know what I mean? It's only a driving theory test, I'll take it again, but that's where I'm at. Slightest little like, and I'm like, don't take me much to get there now, you know? It really don't take me much to get there. For years I couldn't get there, you know? I was coming to meetings really angry, unable to get there, you know? And really, I couldn't really articulate how I felt, you know? And I'd be quite aggressive sometimes in my sharing, and I didn't mean to be. I really didn't mean to offend anyone. I was just in a lot of confusion, foggy, didn't know where I was coming or going, wanted to use. Didn't know I wanted to use. Thought, no, I've got a really good recovery. So that means you don't want to use if you've got a really good recovery. Bollocks. If you've got a really good, in my experience, if I've got a really good recovery, it means I talk about when I want to use. That's what it means. It's that simple. That's what someone said to me early doors. If you want to use, grass yourself up. Go to a meeting or come to my cell and tell me you want to use. Don't go and use. You know, but where I was at the time, I turned around and went, I'm not fucking grass. Seriously, that's what I said to him. That's bizarre. Oh, man. Hey? Where was I at? Jesus, man. But through this process of recovery as well is that I've had some, you know, as well as I spoke about the pain and the stuff that I've had to look at and wanted to look at and needed to look at. And that's enabled me then to experience the real joy of life as well. Do you know what I mean? And I've been in a relationship what seems like all my life, but it's not, with a wonderful woman who's, 11 years. I've known her, should I say. I've been in a relationship 10 years. She liked me for saying that. She's a bit cleaner than I am. But, you know, and that's been amazing. You know, that has been really amazing, learning how to communicate. And it's only through coming here, I've learned how to communicate in here. And people have shown me how to love in here. And my sponsor, bless him, showed me how to do that kind of stuff. He's a really gentle man, more my kind of outgoing sponsor because he's moved to Thailand and I'm in the process of getting a new one, really. You know, he's a really gentle guy, almost the opposite of what I was when I come around. And I thought, I want to aspire to that. I don't want to be this. I want to get beyond this front that I've got and this hard facade that I've got because it really ain't me. I want to be a gentle man like... You know, and I see in him a really gentle guy, so I aspire to that. You know, and he taught me so much. And, you know, taught me about, you know, one of his favourite sayings is, Chris, I'm not perfect, I'm perfectly human. You know, and that gave me permission to be human. That gave me permission to make mistakes. You know, to fuck up. To come here and say, oh, I've done it again. I fucked up. You know, 4 years clean, every Friday night or Saturday night, about four or five of us in recovery were driving to mad places, like Friday night it was, Saturday night it was normally. Got driving to Nottingham to go clubbing from London. And then going straight to football Sunday morning. Playing football for the NA team. You know, when I was growing up, I often say it, when I was growing up, I grew up in Islington. You know, and I wanted to play for Arsenal. That was my dream as a kid growing up. I played around the flats football all the time, you know, until my mum shamed me and shouted my name out the window. And because she used to shout, Christopher, and I thought, oh no. So, you know, but anyway, so, you know, that was my dream. growing up as a kid. And I didn't get to play for Arsenal. I got missed. They overlooked me. So I ended up playing for NA. And you know what, though? That's one of the best things that could have happened for me, because that would come about at a time when I just got out of prison and I was just trying to establish myself in recovery out here, going to meetings and stuff. And I met a bunch of guys that are still, there's a couple of them in the meeting tonight that are still very close and dear friends to me. And we used to turn up every Sunday and we used to go and play football. You know, and that was like reliving my dreams. Do you know what I mean? Albeit one over the Highbury, but, you know, it was fantastic. And it was like, and I've continued to play football because it's a release. I find it a release. All right, I still get sent off every now and then. I still haven't perfected it. I still lose the plot every now and then. The toys go out the pram. But, you know, it's a really enjoyable thing. And that meeting up, consistency, that's what that was about. It was about consistency. Every Sunday, we was consistent. We turned up. Even if I've been out clubbing all night, God knows what that was about. You know, just unravelling, I suppose. Just doing stuff that I never done. I never really kind of went out clubbing. I missed that one. Didn't go to Lyceum. I know I'd probably tell you that I did, but I didn't. I wore the Pringle jumpers and the Farrahs, but I didn't get to the club. I don't know where I was at the time. But to be honest, that was too painful at the time, because to be in those environments was really too painful for me, to be really honest. To be around females, I didn't have the tools to talk to them. I didn't have the courage or the communication skills to talk to women at that stage in my life. My teenage years were painful around that stuff, because my peer group seemed to be able to do that. Mates that I used to hang about with seemed to be able to do that. And I just think, how do they do that, man? How'd you go up and say, hello, my name's blah, blah? And then even if you get the courage to do that, where'd you go after that? Do you know what I mean? Do you come here often? Fuck, I was in trouble. Honestly, I was in trouble in that arena. So I suppose that was what the clubbing was about, 4 years. You know, just maybe doing some of the stuff that I didn't do because I was using drugs. You know, and thankfully I stayed clean. You know, I didn't go and use. Unfortunately, one of my pals at that time, he did use. I don't know whether it was down to that. But just after that period, he did go and use. You know, he's just come back round. He's in a treatment centre in some part of the country, and he's clean again, you know. So please God, you know, he stays clean this time. And it was really nice. I got the phone call from him, and I've had a on-off kind of turnout with him over the years. You know, I get letters from him from prison asking for PlayStation, trainers, all sorts of stuff. And I have to blank it. Well, I don't have to. I chose to blank it because I thought, what? So I'm going to let you know it's all right for you to go and use and go to prison, and I'll support you, basically, by getting you the PlayStation and making you look good on the landing, because you don't want to wear the Adidas sex offenders. Maybe you need to wear them, so that you won't go back again. Maybe that needs to be his experience. That's what I was thinking anyway, so I didn't do it. But it was great when he rang the other night, because at the back of my mind, I was waiting for it. He's going to ask for something, he's going to ask for something, he's going to ask for something. And he didn't ask for anything. So I thought, wow, he's in recovery now. Because when you're in recovery, you're not going to ask for nothing, because you're in touch with the reality of the situation. That was my experience. When I met my girlfriend, I never asked her for nothing. I was so conscious of that, because you know what it's like. Oh, yeah, he's in prison. He's going to graft you. Oh, what, is he sending you them letters with the little pictures on? They all do that. Do you know what I mean? And she had that, you know. She was coming to me and sharing that she met this guy, and people was going, oh, he's just using you. He's going to just, you know, da, da. 11 years later, we're still together. So if any of you are in the room... No, I'm sorry. Still, but I don't know. You know, it's been an amazing experience, really, to be honest. Recovery, I, you know, like, you you know, I was a few years clean, and just by going to meetings and doing the stuff and getting a sponsor and having a look at the steps and doing the stuff that we do and doing a little bit of service and not doing anything special or unique, you know, I've been able to repair some of the relationships. You know, my mum come up to me and put a set of keys in my hand, and I share this often, but it's very significant for me because it was powerful. I thought, wow, man. You know, she come up and put a set of keys in my hand and went, yeah. And I went, what's that for? You know, she went, well, you might be passing, you might want to pop in, you might want to have a shower. And I thought, you sure? And she went, yeah. And I thought, wow, man. She trusts me again. And that's priceless, man. Because that's what this is about on some level. Quick, let's find a joke. but seriously, that's worth more to me than well, I was going to say my season ticket over Arsenal, but it's close. you know, 7 years clean. My brother somehow decided to tell me that he never actually sold my season ticket, and I went, sorry. Because we bought them years previous, but I lost it. I thought he just had to sell it and I'd never see it again. He said, no, it's a yearly thing. I give it to people on a yearly basis. I went, really? He went, yeah. I went, well, you better ring up the fella and tell him he's lost it now because I'm back. And he went, oh, I can't do that. I said, well, blood's thicker than water. And he done it, you know. So it's about 7 years clean, I was sat over Ivory next to my brother with my season ticket back at the beginning of the unbeaten season. Does it get any better than that? Do you know what I mean? You know, it was fantastic, man. And I've got that, you know, and rebuilding that relationship. Because when I was using, I woke up one morning, I come downstairs, my brother's wallet was on the side. This is the reality of where I was at. My brother's wallet was on the side. I nicked his credit card and I went to go and get some money. And I went and got some money. I got 50 quid out of a bank. God knows how I done it, but I managed to do it. Cashier must have been spark out. I got 50 quid out of the bank. I went and scored. I ended up with some fellow who was a using addict. I ended up scoring down King's Cross. I had this bright idea that I'm going to go and get this fellow a pair of trainers. Took him up the West End into a shop to get him a pair of trainers and got nicked. Nah. At me nut and trying to kite my brother's card, and I got arrested. But you know what? The consequence of that was that you can imagine, kind of. You know, my brother. And then the police come in my cell after a few hours and go, oh, we've just realised there's the same name as you on the card. Is he anything to do with it? I said, no, of course he ain't. But that's damaging. Do you know what I mean? How can he trust his brother? He left his wallet on the side and I've chored his card. But that's where I was at. But because of this process, I've been able to repair some of that stuff, you know. I knocked him for, when we bought them season tickets, it was 200 quid each. And I knocked him 1 year for the price of the season ticket. So through the process of the amends, my sponsor said to me, go and pay him back. I suggest you pay him back the £200. So this is a bit sort of bittersweet really for me. So I give him back 100 quid one day. And he said to me, I said, do you remember that time, blah, blah, blah? And he went, no, I don't remember. So I thought, touch. But then I thought, no, it's not about that. So I said, well, I do remember. So I said, look, I want to give you that 100, I want to give you 100 quid now, and I'd like to give you 100 quid when I got it. And he said, you sure? I went, yeah. So I give him 100 quid. The next time I see him around my mum's, I went, oh, I've got to have 100 quid. So I give him the 100 quid, and I'd done something, man. I thought, oh, my God. And this sort of highlighted that I still need to keep coming back. It's a process. I'm not there yet, you know. Give him the 100 quid. And he took it, put it in his pocket. And I, oh, what come out of my mouth? I nearly died. I turned around and said, don't you say thanks. Oh, hey? I thought, oh, no. As soon as I said it, I thought, oh, no. What have you done? Do you know what I mean? But I'm not perfect. Part of me does want to get a pat on the back when I make amends. Part of me wants the world to go, look, yeah, look. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm doing good. Still, you know, but it's what is it, progress, not perfection. So I'll keep coming back, and hopefully I'll get to that stage where I'll keep my mouth shut one day and don't ask for the little bit of affirmation. Don't need it. Feel more comfortable in myself, you know. But on a bad day, still today, on a bad day, I can be quite insecure, needy, and 5 minutes left. Yeah, I can, you know. Occasionally, I can pick up my girlfriend's phone and start looking through it. And then think, oh, what are you doing? There's nothing in there for you. What do you want to look at her text messages for? What's it got to do with you? But it's like insecure, needy. You know, and it's just recognising that. Do you know what I mean? Just because I've got X amount of years clean, I'm still a human being. You know, and I still sometimes have that going on. That's my humanness. You know, but thankfully, because of how I got my life set up, I can eventually get on the phone and say to one of my mates, this is what I've done. Or ring my sponsor and say, this is what I've done. Or this is what's going on. I feel a bit whatever. I feel a bit scared, or I feel a bit insecure, or maybe, I don't know, think she's going to have it up. And I'm glad, I mean, I'm still at that place where I don't, you know, I can come to a meeting and talk about what goes on for me. Because that's what I've done when I first come around, and that's what I continue to do. And sometimes that's difficult, it's tough, especially when there's hard stuff going on. You know, this people might be sick of hearing it, maybe they're not, but this last couple of years, it's wounded me, man. Wow. And maybe that's why I'm close to tears a lot of the time, because I've been so wounded by it, you know. I realised desperately, that sounds, maybe, I don't know, anyway. But I wanted to experience something with my girlfriend and have a child. I opened my eyes up to it and I thought, wow, that's something I'd really love to do. And I'd really love to experience with this woman. And it ain't gonna happen. Tried the medical thing, no success. And it ain't gonna happen. You know? And those sort of feelings and emotions, but I've been able to come to meetings and share it, you know? But it's, you know, it's not it's really not easy to share that sort of stuff, but you know what? I've always been supported and helped by this fellowship and the people in it. My friends supported me financially, emotionally, in every way, you know? And they come up to me after the meeting, I'm like, what I've got coming out of my mouth, and they give me a hug. And that tells me I'm all right. And that tells me things are going to be all right. No matter what's going on, no matter how painful it can be at times. And that's priceless, man. Because when I was in crack houses, no one gave me a hug. Desperately needed one. When I was shaking like a leaf, in trouble. It's fantastic what goes on here, you know. You know, and who knows, God's got different plans for me, you know, and that's how I've cultivated in here, you know. And those different plans are going to be whatever, I don't know, they ain't come to fruition at the moment. But we're still together, which is amazing. To be honest, that's amazing, because I so could have easily had it up on the back of that, because it's incredibly painful, but we're still together, we're working through it, we're going through our own processes around it, you know, and we've got our own support, and, you know, we started to begin the adoption thing, got that slammed in our face at the moment. Maybe we'll try that again a bit further down the line when we're less raw, you know, but I don't know, man. All I wanted when I come around was to stop using drugs. I've got so much more. So much more. And I want to continue to remain teachable, you know. Just quickly finish on that. I often don't share this. I don't know why, but, you know, I left school at 16, something like that. With no qualifications. I've just finished the first year of a college course. I've got another 2 years to go. You know, incredible. Amazing. You know, we can achieve anything once we get clean and stay clean. Do you know what I mean? That's the bottom line. It's been a slower process, like I say, you know. But I wouldn't trade it for anything, really. And I'm still learning. Still, you know, when I, you know, I've still got a long way to go. There ain't no destination. There ain't no getting off the bus, as my mate used to say to me. There's no getting off the bus now. You're on this for the journey. Do you know what I mean? So I've got my Oyster card. And I'm staying. I'm a paid up member. I'm staying, you know. I'm staying. I'm still going to do service. I'm going to find another sponsor. I'm going to work through the steps again. I'm going to try and help people. And I'm going to get the help that I've had massive amounts of some lovely people. And I'm eternally grateful to be clean, to be alive, and have half a chance. I think I'll leave it there. Thanks.